Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here on a Canucks playoff game day, live from the Mobile Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks Talk brought to you by Applewood Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi's 10-year, 160,000-kilometer powertrain warranty is bold, but they have over 100 years to back it up. Details at Applewood Mitsubishi in the Richmond Auto Mall. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Seasons Roofing. Sun, rain, wind, or snow, All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. For your free quote, visit allseasonsroofing.ca. Ian McIntyre going to join us on the line momentarily here, our colleague from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Get his thoughts on a big Game 5 coming up between the Canucks and the Nashville Predators. Now, interestingly, I did see our guy Brendan Batchelor tweet, Andrew Burnett says the Preds may make one lineup change tonight. So not getting any further details from Andrew Burnett there, but at least the possibility of, as you said, just that little tweak, that little shuffle, just to give something, give them a new look, a reason to think it's going to go differently. We might see that, Andrew Burnett says, for the Nashville Predators.
I'd probably like to see Juuso Parsonen if I was the Predators, just because he's a huge body with a lot of skill. I mean, if you were able to throw him on the fourth line in place of not Sherwood or McCarron,
Cole
but
Smith.
Cole Smith, I think you could, you know, is he, does he bring much of the same big bodiedness with also a slightly higher upside in terms of his ability to pull off a move and score? That would, to me, be an interesting one if the Predators considered it.
Yeah, we'll see if that lineup change does
materialize.
End up materializing. Great word.
Thank you.
Great pull transfer right there. As I said, we'll get Ian McIntyre on the line here in just a second. As you can get your text as well in 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one comes in. I want to see the Canucks start with focus. Don't start the game happy-go-lucky thinking, hey, we only need to win one of three. And, yeah, it is all about that that balance, right, between the urgency without getting in your own head about, uh-oh, is this all of a sudden a must-win type game, right? You have to find that balance. You have to walk that line and, as you said, play Canucks hockey right off the bat.
And it's not a must-win, but it's worth remembering how quickly things snowball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw it. We saw it in Game 4. And the fact that there's the symmetry of the 3-1 lead in Game 4 and the 3-1 lead in this series, I think, is a pregnant one. One to recall and bear down.
Well, and
you got to bear down.
I was saying earlier in the show, you know, you take out even the specifics of these teams. Just think about generic teams in the circumstances. If the road team wins this game, they're going back to home on a high, right? And then all of a sudden, if you take care of business there, it's a coin flip in Game 7. You want to avoid that.
Yeah.
You want to make it happen tonight. All right, joining us now on the line here, the triple threat from Sportsnet, radio, TV, print, /digital. He is our guy, Ian McIntyre. iMac, thank you as always for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know that quote from JT that it's 8.5 hours of flying time?
Mm-hmm.
That's for the team and a return trip on their charter. For we reporters, it's actually like that almost each way. 8.5 hours of flying time. And my old Vancouver Sun colleague, Elliot Papp, told me when I was a very young and impressionable journalist that whatever inconveniences the most people will occur in the playoffs. So I hope he's wrong, because under that thinking, we're all dragging our asses back to the airport tomorrow, but I hope not.
Yeah, nobody wants that. No, I know Drantz doesn't want that. I know you don't want that. Obviously, the Canucks don't. And just how important...
I flew direct yesterday, though, Mac. 4 hours, baby. Let's go.
Oh, come on. It's not 4 hours coming west. You're exaggerating.
4.5.
Oh, man. If the series keeps going longer, they're going to have to add more direct flights between these cities to hook you guys up.
It was all Canucks fans, too. It was hilarious.
That's
amazing.
But
people, I'll just digress for another 30
please.
Seconds. People would be amazed. And I know, like, nobody feels sorry for us. nor should they, because look what we've tricked people into paying us to do. But most people have no idea how hard it is to get to some of these American cities. Like, they think it's a direct flight or easy, like St. Louis or Nashville or Columbus or Buffalo or Carolina. It's not what people. Next year, Salt Lake City, that's going to be brutal as well, though I'm excited that there'll be a team there. But yeah, so enough of our problems.
Salt Lake City's not that bad, Mac. We're going to be fine.
Yeah, there's no direct, though, I don't think.
Really?
There used to be.
It's like a pretty big hub for like Wyoming and stuff. So I don't know. I feel like I can get there direct, but I guess I haven't looked.
Well, we'll find out. Yeah. I look forward to finding out. Look, round two is going to be a direct flight. If they get there, and they got to get there first. And, you know, we were just talking about kind of finding that balance between playing with that sense of urgency, recognizing how much you stand to benefit from closing things out in game five tonight, getting yourself that rest versus, you know, as Rick Tockett said, you don't need to necessarily have desperation because you are up 3-1. What are you kind of looking for just in terms of the mentality from the Canucks tonight?
Yeah, well, personally, I think there should be desperation because of how this team played the two games in Nashville. You know, given the form of the two clubs, to come away with a split would have been a bit of a heist to get both games. I love Thomas's term, smash and grab, because that's what it was in game four. So there should be some urgency. And I know there's recognition by the players, and I know there's accountability, because that's one of the strongest things that Tockett and Albin have in store in this organization is accountability for what happens on the ice. So there should be desperation for that. But also, there is nothing more dangerous in the playoffs than thinking because we're up 3-1, well, we got three more chances. So if it doesn't happen in game five, oh, no, we'll take care of business in game six. Oh, no, if it doesn't happen in game six, well, we've got home ice in game seven. You think the Calgary Flames were thinking that in 94 when they were up 3-1 on Vancouver or the Rangers in that final? Or, I mean, there's lots of times Canucks have been up 3-1, such as Minnesota in, yep, you know, 03. You have to seize the moment when it's available. And the moment is available tonight. Be the best team in this series tonight so that you don't have to worry about being the best team on Friday or the best team on Sunday. Be the best tonight. Earn yourself a couple of days rest and healing and then get ready for the second round. But take care of business tonight. Tonight's game is everything.
JT, in discussing tonight's game in the scrum, really kept coming back to the concept of Canucks hockey. And Mac, you know me, I'm usually skeptical when hockey people talk about things like identity because I don't know exactly what they mean. But when Miller talks about Canucks hockey, I feel like the terms are defined and we know what it looks like. And it involves getting an early lead and it involves grinding the game away while logging tons of zone time created in part by the forecheck. How much does it matter to you that this team finds that gear given how the last few games have played out?
Well, it certainly matters. Mm. And in this series, they've shown that you can win games where they're not at their best. And that's one of the things that I made a point of and others as well, that the floor for this organization has come up so much. The floor for how the Canucks play, that they're good enough defensively, and boy, their defense has taken a step up. All these you know, mountain men in positions 3 through 6, how well they've played. You know, they can get away with basically almost flatlining offensively and still winning games. But ultimately, you have to play your best. This isn't a team that has the margin of error to think that they can just kind of do that indefinitely and they'll keep finding ways to win games. And certainly if they get through this series and on to the next one, you're not beating Edmonton the way that you've played these games against Nashville. So they do have to find their game. And, you know, there is some silver lining to that as well, is that one of the things about this team during the season and its consistency was that it was never in a doldrum for very long, right? The lulls did not last very long. And yes, they had extended periods where the offense didn't score, so maybe, you know, they're a 500 team for a month late in the season. But typically, if this team goes off the boil for two or three or four games, it gets back on the boil. Like, it finds itself again. And I do think there's a certain odds in their favor that they're going to start to play better, but they're going to have to play better as well. Like, this, what they've done, it's great. They've shown their resilience. The goaltending story has been amazing. They've had, you know, inspired efforts from some guys on different nights, and certainly last game with the way Besser and Miller rescued the team offensively at the end. But ultimately, this is a bit of a false economy, what we're seeing in terms of their success. They have to get back their game. They have to start pushing the fight down to the other end of the ice. They cannot spend as much time in their zone as they have been. It's not healthy for Quinn Hughes or anybody else.
Yep.
It's not good for their goalies, even though that's been an amazing story. And ultimately, it's usually not good for the bottom line, although it hasn't really hurt the Canucks yet. But they have to start getting out of their zone, handling the Nashville forecheck better, and pushing the play down into the offensive end, where the Canucks have been one of the best teams in the NHL this season, but they haven't given themselves a chance to play in the offensive zone all that much so far in this series.
Mac, I was saying in the last segment that my gut says that the Canucks find a way to close this out tonight, but my head is pretty worried about all of the investments that the Predators have made throughout this series on, like, things that will matter later, right? And the hits they've landed on Hughes is sort of the top line item, but I think it goes beyond that. The false economy term, I think, is a fascinating one. Do you get the sort of conflicting sense that, like, on the one hand, the Canucks are firmly in control of this series, and on the other, in some ways, it feels like they're hanging on by a thread?
Yeah. Well, I mean, far be it for me to tell you about analytics, Thomas. But, I mean, all you have to do is look at some of the basic numbers, not even the fancy stats, just some basic ones. And they're usually fairly predictive of outcome. So, again, you can't keep getting outshot this way. You can't keep relying on your goalie being so much better than their goalie, which has been the case so far as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually you have to play well. I think I was listening to you guys. I'm out and about driving, trying to get a couple of things done. So I was listening the last while. And I agree with you. I think the best game by far that the Canucks have played in this series was the one that they lost. And the worst game that they played was probably the last one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, they have to, you know, are they going to win tonight? Again, I know that this team and they know that they're capable of so much more. Their track history, their form on the season is that they do not scuffle for very long, and that at some point they're going to get back on top of their game. And I think there's a very good chance that could be tonight. But if you look at it from the Predators' perspective, they feel like, you know, they were robbed. And they feel like, hey, all we've done is beat the hell out of the Canucks these last two games, figuratively and literally. Let's just go do it again, and we're going to start getting the results. And so it's not going to be an easy out. I know that's being captain obvious, but I can see it from the Predators' perspective that they may have a lot more confidence coming into this game than you would think a team that's down 3-1 in a series should have.
You mentioned the goaltending, what a storyline it's been, and the intrigue not going away around the Canucks goaltending situation. Rick Tocchet declining to name his starter, and, you know, I know Drance kind of broke down the some of the theatrics around who's leaving the ice first, who's talking to Ian Clark, who's doing the starters drills. What did you think of everything surrounding the Canucks goaltending decision going into Game 5 tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually pretty basic and pretty simple, too. I mean, Casey DeSmith is healthy enough to play. He was healthy enough to practice on Saturdays after supposedly sustaining the lower body injury in Game 3. He's healthy enough to skate. He's healthy enough to back up. He's healthy enough to play. So clearly they're just being cautious with him. And I think it's easy to surmise that's because they know they're already without Thatcher Demko long-term. They don't want to turn whatever is this minor thing is, and I think I'm safe in characterizing it that way. They don't want to turn this minor thing for Casey DeSmith into something more so that now maybe they're without both of their NHL goalies for the next round. So I think they're just being ultra cautious. It really helps that line of thinking from their perspective that Silov's came in and looked so good and doesn't look like he's a handicap, doesn't look like he's a detriment. As Tocchet said, it doesn't look like the moment's too big for him. And, you know, the reality is Silov's is probably going to be here next season with Demko. He's ready for the next step. So it's not like in trying to make sure that they don't do anything stupid with Casey DeSmith, that they really undermine themselves and their chance to win by going with Silovs, who played well in that game. So to me, it's a pretty simple thing. They go with Silovs. If they win the series tonight, fantastic. You know, great for everyone. Everyone gets, as I said, to rest and heal for a couple of days. If they lose the series or lose tonight, then we'll see Casey DeSmith Friday in Nashville, but he's ready to play. So this is clearly just about trying not to turn something little into something big.
Ivac, just before we let you go, we got a resounding response in our inbox that there are direct flights to Salt Lake City. We have multiple people saying,
okay,
from personal experience, Salt Lake is a Delta hub, so you guys should be all right. So we got the good news there, and we'll let you go and get some of those errands done. Thanks for doing this, as always, Ivac. We appreciate it.
I'm going to Expedia it right now because I did check when the NHL made an announcement. Maybe I was looking at the wrong day of the week or something.
Yeah.
But I'm going to text you back. If the people are wrong.
But if they're, I will say, if they're not daily, it's of limited use then, right? Like, you need the regular direct flights
seems
to make it really count.
I actually did do the Expedia check, Mac, and it looks like at least most of the time you'll be able to fly direct. Some days you might be SOL.
All right. Well, then I'll admit that I'm wrong. I'm not checking Expedia. I'll take your word for it. The people are right yet again.
Yet again. Thanks, Ivac.
See you guys.
That is Sportsnet's Ian McIntyre joining us here, and some interesting thoughts on the goaltending situation, or it's not a controversy, but just the intrigue surrounding who's going to start in net for the Canucks.
There's definitely intrigue. So sometimes, you know, I like to do this where you feel yourself, feel your way through a problem.
I do.
As opposed to, I really messed that up, didn't I? Clip it!
You know I like to do this.
I like to feel my way through a problem,
uh-huh,
as opposed to, you know, especially in limited information environments, right? So think about it this way, right? DeSmith played exceptionally in Game 3.
Mm-hmm.
Silovs was good in Game 4. I don't think you would look at the body of work of the two goaltenders and say Silovs was better than DeSmith. In fact, I think you'd say the opposite. So there's got to be a health component to this. If it was a pure pain management issue, right? Because this is where what you bump into in the playoffs, because everyone wants to play and everyone's willing to walk across a burning lake to play, right? If this was simply an injury management issue, DeSmith would be in. He's an expiring contract, right? You play, like, Danny Sabourin's career got extended. He earned two additional contracts, mostly because he came on in relief of Roberto Luongo while he was in the bathroom in Anaheim, right? Like the amount that you can earn, especially as like a backup veteran goaltender in the playoffs by being a reliable option when disaster strikes, massive. It's huge. Huge returns. Huge ROI for DeSmith in the series. If it was a matter of managing the pain and playing through it, he'd be in. If it was something that could worsen, as IMac alluded to, that would be the reason to be cautious. And so I think Mac's formulation is instructive there. I think he's dead on when you really think your way through what considerations would the organization be weighing in making their goaltending decision today.
Well, and I think the other, and you know, you mentioned this right off the top when you joined the show, right? The question of, okay, Archer Shelov's at 100% versus Casey DeSmith at whatever percent he...
The texter said we all like that trance.
But, you know, Archer Shelov's at 100% versus Casey DeSmith at, you know, pick a number, whatever percentage of total health he's at, and how big does the gap have to be? And I think as much as you would say that Casey DeSmith played better than Shelov's in Game 3, I also think most people would agree it's not that big a gap. Like, Casey DeSmith doesn't have to be that far away from 100% for 100% Shelov's to become the better option, right? And so it's pretty easy to imagine a scenario where he's capable of playing, but there's just enough doubt, and as you said, maybe just enough risk about worsening the injury, that it makes more sense that, one, it just flat out gives you a better chance potentially with Shelov's tonight, right, depending on the injury to Casey DeSmith, and it preserves him going forward. It preserves him for, you know, a potential Game 6 or certainly going in to next series, right? So it makes sense. I would still very much expect to see Shelov's in net tonight against the Predators, but as IMac said, if there is a Game 6, it feels like it's pointing towards Casey DeSmith, because again, Game 6, I believe, wouldn't go until Friday, right? So you've got an extra couple of days in there as well to see what's going on. All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep your thoughts coming in. Canucks playoff coverage is brought to you by Merritt Kitchens. Don't have the read in the rundown there, Dom, but I'll do it at another point. Oh, here we go. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Merritt Kitchens. Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at MerrittKitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. We'll take a break. Emma Lingan from the Hockey News on the Preds joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strantz here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech Studio, mobile Kintech Studio here at Rogers Arena. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and it is, of course, another Canucks playoff game day at Rogers Arena, taking on the Nashville Predators tonight at 7 o'clock. Preds on the rope. Canucks looking to finish them off after that dramatic Game 4 win. And for more on the Nashville perspective on things, she covers the team for the Hockey News. She is Emma Lingan. Emma, thanks very much for doing this today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And, you know, I was glad to have you on today because I've been really thinking a lot after that game on Sunday about, like, the conversations we'd be having on our show and in this city if the shoe had been on the other foot and the Canucks had lost a game in that fashion. Like, what has the reaction been that you've seen from Predators fans, from, I don't know if you've had a chance to really talk to the players about it, but just that was such a dramatic loss. What has the reaction been?
Well, it hasn't been great. I think that there's been a lot of doom and gloom here from the fans, at least, and it has I think maybe just over the last 24 hours kind of dissipated a little bit, but I was getting a lot of just, you know, immediate knee-jerk reaction of that was the worst playoff loss in franchise history, and this is terrible, and we'll never come back from this, and this is the worst thing that's ever happened to us ever. And so I also host a show here in Nashville, and was kind of telling people the next morning, like, okay, everybody, let's just take a breath. It's, you know, it's the first round. It's not the cup final. Also, this team wasn't even supposed to make the playoffs in the first place. Like, let's just kind of have some perspective. And I think with the player, what I kind of try to remind people, and I think how the players feel as well, is that, you know, they've been here before, maybe not in this exact situation, but they have been in situations, you know, as recently as February when they lost to the Dallas Stars by 9-2 at home. And it was just embarrassing. And then what did they do after that? They went on an 18-game point streak. And so now I don't think that they're going to maybe replicate that again. But I think it's important to remember that not all is lost. You know, it wasn't an elimination game. Series isn't over yet. But it's definitely been an uphill battle trying to get people, at least the fans, to hear that.
Yeah, that's a good point that I hadn't really connected, though, about the Preds kind of bouncing back from a really tough loss. Obviously, in the regular season, we all know, you know, the legend of the U2 concert and everything like that. And it is different doing it in a playoff series. But, you know, it's interesting because hearing from our fans and our listeners here, I don't know if nerves is too strong of a word for it, but I think there is a recognition that, look, it's 3-1, but this series could easily be 2-2. Nashville could easily be up 3-1 if a couple bounces go the other way. I think there's a lot of hope that the Canucks will finish this off in game five. And, you know, I think if you take a step back, as much as it's really tough to come back from 3-1, you can see some of the things that Nashville is doing well in this series that could at least give them a chance to get back into it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think especially after game four, I, you know, could kind of get a sense of the reaction from Canucks fans, and not even just the fans, but even listening to Rick Tocchet afterwards in his press conference, you know, it was kind of this general understanding that, okay, the Canucks got pretty lucky in game four and Nashville outplayed them for 57 out of 60 minutes. And so I think there is certainly a recognition of that. You know, that's not to say that the Canucks shouldn't have won that game, you know, it with the defensive breakdowns that Nashville had at the end there, but I think there's certainly a recognition that the Canucks certainly were lucky and Nashville really did kind of take it to them. And game four overall was Nashville's best game of the series. So it's the best that they've looked all series for a, you know, more or less complete effort until the very end there. So I think there's definitely that recognition from the Canucks, from their fans, that like, all right, well, we squeaked by with that one, but this series could easily be 2-2 right now. And I think there's also that understanding that obviously Nashville is going to come into this game five, you know, out for blood. They're going to be angry. They're going to be frustrated and they're really going to want to write the ship after what happened in game four. So I think that there's a lot of factors at play there that can make this an interesting one tonight.
Out for blood. Now I'm excited. is there any question about whether Nashville can withstand the emotional body blow that was the last 4 minutes of game four? You know, one thing I'm going to be curious about, I'm sure with the veteran composition of this team that they'll be, that they'll start well, but I'm curious to see if the Canucks are able to like get an early lead, if they're able to chip away at the belief of the Predators. That to me is like one of the dynamics I'm most fascinated to watch. What's your sense of it as someone who's been around this team all season?
It's been interesting, you know, for this entire season, really, it's almost been a tale of two seasons for Nashville. It's kind of pre-All-Star break and post-All-Star break, and or if you want to say pre-U2 concert and post-U2 concert. I think it's kind of, you know, they took something that was a major weakness for them and turned it into a strength. Now, game four notwithstanding, they have really, for the last half of the regular season, had really turned their third period into a strength. It became a point where, you know, you didn't feel if they went into the third period with a, you know, without the lead, you weren't concerned like, all right, this is over. They can never come back. And I think that they have been able, you know, their third periods really down the stretch of the regular season have been their best periods. They kind of tended to start out a little slower, honestly, on the whole, for the most part. Their first periods maybe have not been their best, but they've really kind of gotten better as they've gone on within a game. And so I think that maybe a slow start or not, you know, getting right off the jump for this particular team, I don't think that that is as big of a concern, because they've repeatedly shown that they can, you know, while they may struggle playing with a lead, they are certainly able to bounce back from a deficit and, you know, kind of gain steam and get going as the game goes on.
You know, it's interesting because the Preds, I think they'll look at a bunch of these games and think, hey, we've played pretty well. Certainly that last game, they dominated most of the game. Now they find themselves down 3-1. And I think Andrew Brunette has kind of an interesting dilemma here. How much do you just stay with what looks like it's been working versus how much do you switch things up now that you're down 3-1 in the series? And it sounds like maybe only one lineup change, but are there things that you're seeing in the Predators play that, okay, yeah, the process has been pretty good, but that they can still tighten up and they need to tighten up and improve on if they're going to get back in this series?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, and having covered Andrew Brunette for a while now and knowing how he operates, he's going to be very reluctant to make any changes to his lineup if he's overall happy with the performance and how they've looked, which he should be, you know, overall after game four. You know, I would say one thing that maybe concerns me a little bit is maybe the size advantage that Vancouver has, specifically, you know, the size of their defensemen. Certainly they're just bigger and they can knock guys off of pucks a lot easier than Nashville can. And I think that, you know, Nashville's got some smaller forwards and some smaller defensemen who are, you know, obviously there's not much you can do about that unless you're willing to make a personnel change. But again, it sounds like Andrew Brunette is kind of going to stand pat, stay the course, because that's kind of what he's done all year with this team. And he likes to keep guys together who are having chemistry. Obviously, he was forced to make a lineup change with the injury to Spencer Stastny. So Dante Fabbro coming in for him, I think, was the right choice. And so I think as far as the, you know, what the team can do better and what they can tighten up, it's just these defensive breakdowns that they've been having where, and it's, I'm not even sure, you know, watching it and looking at it, I can't even tell you what exactly needs to be fixed other than like maybe put a guy on Brock Besser. Maybe we defend him a little better. But I think that, you know, overall, I think it's just, they get into these critical situations and they're just these breakdowns, like total team breakdowns of the defense. And you're not quite sure what happens there, but it's something that it's been a problem before this series too. It was a problem throughout the regular season. So it's something that we've seen before and it's something that they haven't quite been able to rectify. So I think, I don't know if it's a communication thing or a zone coverage thing, but I think that that's probably the biggest area. And we saw that happen at the end of game four.
Emma, really appreciate the time. Enjoy game five tonight. Thanks for doing this.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
That is Emma Lingen covering the Preds for the Hockey News, also a host on 440 Sports in Nashville, weighing in on the Predators' perspective and, you know, pointing to the bounce back in the regular season they had, right? So maybe that's a reason you believe they can bounce back a little bit here. But, you know, Emma talked about the defensive breakdowns in big situations for the Nashville Predators. I think that's a fair point. As much as they have carried play, they've also, you know, obviously most notably in the final minutes of game four, they've hung their goalie out to dry a little bit in key situations. And I know there's a lot of Predators fans who are unhappy with Saros. His numbers are not good, but I look at a lot of those goals that Brock Besser is scoring, and those are pretty nice finishes. Those are pretty nice plays.
They are, I don't like. There's three Canucks down low and Saros. Like, there's just a wall of Canucks.
On the tying goal.
On the tying
goal. It's basically like 3-on-1.
3-on-1.
Yeah.
But the shot gets through to him, and he kind of tries to whack it past them, but he whacks it into the wall, and the decision leaves him sprawling. Like, there's so little time left at that point that I think trying to smother it at least leaves you square. And I think most goalies, like, I've been... I sort of was watching it, trying to figure out exactly what had happened, focusing in like a laser on that Quinn Hughes play, right? Because I was just like blown away by how quickly he was able to get going downhill. But the, I think the one piece of criticism you'd maybe have for Saros is that it feels like he's almost going to opting for desperation saves as like his selection, maybe a little earlier than you'd want. That's sort of one line of criticism that some of the goalie people who've been watching this series kind of closely have kind of had, is that they'd like to see maybe him stay a little squarer first, try to smother it, because the sprawling with your stick is still going to be there if that doesn't work, right?
I think you could say that there's moments where obviously a big save would have gone a long way for the Preds, right? And even, you know, the 3-2 goal, like, I think he gets the blade of his skate on it, or at least part of it, and deflects it. Like, it's so close to making the save. But it's a lot of situations where it's not as if he's letting in stinkers. I guess the Elias Lindholm one would be the one to point to.
But even his blocker, like, haven't exposed his blocker after that goal.
But from an elite goalie like Saros can be, you want... It's not enough just to not let in stinkers, right? You need those big saves at certain moments as well, or at least you want that. It's just tough to assign blame to him when you'd be really talking about some pretty remarkable goaltending to keep those goals out. Well, like, and yes, he's capable of that, and I get that, but the team needs to do a little bit more in front of him in those situations.
There's no world that where the Predators come back in this series where both of the following things are not true, right? Like, both of the following things have to be true if the Predators are going to be victorious in a Game 7 over the course of this week. Vancouver's goaltending needs to be a story. Not a story because of who's available or who's going to start.
Not like an interesting story.
And not something where it's like, wow, Vancouver's depth.
Yeah.
Man, it's holding.
Ian Clark's amazing.
like we've got to be talking about a Game 7 starter, and there's got to be like real anxiety among Canucks fans by the time we're having that conversation. And then that anxiety has to be well-founded. In Game 7, like, that has to happen, and Saros needs to, like, significantly outplay whoever is in Vancouver's blue paint. Like, that's just... Saros versus DeSmith Seelovs needs to be a cutting edge for the Predators that, like, actually inflicts a wound on the Canucks. That has to be an edge that actually matters, that actually proves fatal if the Predators are coming back in this series.
Yeah,
that's
the
standard.
You're right. They haven't made that potential edge count at all so far, obviously. And that's part of the reason why they're down 3-1 in this series. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line here. I do feel like we should talk about Elias Pettersson a little bit. For the first time ever in the history of Vancouver Sports Radio, we should park some time to talk about Elias Pettersson going into this game. We didn't have a chance. Well, we touched on it very briefly, but not after we heard from Rick Tocchet yesterday, right? And Tocchet, you know, pretty honest, pretty upfront, not slamming the player, but just saying, you know, obviously acknowledging that he's struggling to get going in this series, and really just zeroing in on, okay, he has to move his feet. Like, job number one. Don't think about a million things at once. Think about one thing going into the game, and that's moving your feet. And it's interesting with Elias Pettersson. I was talking about this a bit before you joined me. You know, one of his distinguishing superpowers in the NHL is the creativity and the ability to see things and the ability to try things and accomplish things that very, very few other players in the league can do. So you don't want to completely remove that, but I also wonder if we're at the point where simplify is kind of the name of the game for Pettersson. And it is, get the puck deep and let Hoglander and Mikheyev get on the forecheck. Move your feet. Be in those battles. Make the simple plays as a way of just taking baby steps to get back into the series. And normally I would be terrified of stripping out the creativity, stripping out that dynamic element from Elias Pettersson's game. But you have to build him back in some way right now. And I wonder if that's part of the answer from Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff, is just kind of take it back to square one, keep it as simple as possible, and build from there as you have some success.
The Canucks have taken 9 shots in 51 minutes with Pettersson on the ice at 5-on-5 in this series.
Yeah.
There's no way around that. That this team is on the precipice of advancing with that fact being true is legitimately like the mind exploding
that
emoji.
Trio, so when all three of them were on the ice 5-on-5, Hoglander, Pettersson, Mikheyev, 0 shots on goal in 8 minutes and 37 seconds in game 4, only 3 shot attempts.
Yikes.
Pettersson, 0 shot attempts at 5-on-5 in game 4. Like, those are startling numbers.
Yeah, you know what, it's wild too that the like Garland line has been outscored.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have guessed that. You know, but man, there's so much that's not going Vancouver's way.
Yeah.
It's all going Vancouver's way. Unbelievable. Honestly, it's really amazing. Like,
as I said yesterday, hockey is a preposterous sport. An absolutely preposterous sport.
It rocks.
Like, what is happening in this series?
It rocks. It's so good. Well, what's happening in the series is that the special teams edge Vancouver was able to build in game 3 stole a game that the Predators otherwise outplayed them in. And then Vancouver was able to eliminate third period deficits in games 1 and 4, which was probably my biggest concern about this team.
It's a good point.
But I will say, when I was describing it, I did note that I did think their 6-on-5 game was good. It was just the 5-on-5 I was worried about, although game 1 that turned for them. But I think that's it. It's like the Canucks have managed to successfully execute a pair of comebacks, and their special teams carried them in one game, and boom. 3-1 with a chance to advance, but still work to do. Look, they need more from Pettersson. The fact that Pettersson started, like, Nashville started to hunt Pettersson versus O'Reilly. I mean, the idea of right now Pettersson is in Vancouver's bottom six, and that should be a huge edge, and it's not, it certainly poses some interesting questions, and I don't think those interesting questions are the ones that his biggest detractors want to have. Should they trade him? He's overpaid. Stop it. But I do think some interesting questions about exactly, you know, where his level of fitness is. And I don't mean his, like, fitness from a preparation standpoint. I mean his like, physical readiness from a durability standpoint. Where's that? And what can this club realistically expect from him? Right? Like, what's the level that he can hit right now? Because they need more than this.
Yes.
This is not enough.
They've shown now it takes some big time moments and some fortunate bounces and all that, but they can beat the Preds with Elias Pettersson at this level. Certainly they can win one more out of 3 with Elias Pettersson at this level. But again, we're starting to set our sights beyond that, right? And it's a very similar conversation, not completely the same, but I look at Quinn Hughes. Can the Canucks finish this series with Quinn Hughes playing the way he was playing for 40 minutes in Nashville on game 4? Yeah, they can. Can they do any damage beyond that? No, they can't. And I think it's a very similar thing with Elias Pettersson. Can you find a way to wrap this up tonight without Elias Pettersson making an impact? You absolutely can. But if you have hopes of doing anything beyond that, which this team should, which this team does, you need to get Elias Pettersson back to being a difference maker. And whatever starts that process tonight, I maybe it's the simplify thing, but like, that needs to start ASAP.
Well, you know, in a crucial moment, when he gets that pass from Quinn Hughes in the high slot, he at no point looks at Miller. He's looking shot the whole way, and he just kind of dribbles the puck, forehand to backhand, and it looks like at any point he's going to unleash a wrist shot, and that exerted gravity, and then he makes a clean little deferral pass to Miller going downhill. It's not a lot, but maybe that's something.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what we're talking about at this point, right? It's just those little scraps to build on at this point. Like, okay, hey, I contributed there. I made a play that kept the play alive.
He didn't just contribute. He had, at least for an instant, the flash of his usual, like, imperious, you know, deep blue brainiac thing, which is what makes him such a special player, right? Pettersson is special because he controls the environment, right? When he's at his best, Pettersson controls the environment and then is also able to help his line mates finish at a super efficient rate. like a super efficient clip. And right now it's like neither of those aspects of his game are evident, which is why, you know, we've been talking for a while that it doesn't look right. And the reporting sort of starting to match that observation. The fact remains is that at least there was a hint of something that looked familiar, that looked like what Pettersson can look like when he's at his best. And you know, look, the Canucks are going to need more than a flash of it if they're going to do damage. I mean, they can probably win this series without it, but
yeah.
can they hang with a probable matchup against the Oilers?
No.
With Pettersson playing like this? I don't think so.
No, they need, and you know, as much as we're focusing on winning this game, you know, buy time for Thatcher Demko, get Quinn Hughes some time to rest up after the beating he's taking in this series, I think for Elias Pettersson, whatever bumps and bruises he's dealing with, and just a mental reset as well, could be absolutely massive if they're able to close this one out tonight. And, you know, as you said, look, they need more than flashes. I agree with that. But some flashes tonight wouldn't go amiss either. You know what I mean? Some flashes, if they end up with the puck in the back of the net, even if it's not on a shift-to-shift basis that he's exerting that kind of dominance, he's in a position now where moving down the lineup that it's kind of a bonus if you get that from him, at least in this game. They need more of that going forward. But, hey, yeah, let's start with some flashes from that line. Because the numbers this series, by the way, somebody texted in, zero is not a number. I said those numbers are startling, and one of them was zero. Pretty sure zero is a number. I'm not a mathematician, but I'm pretty sure zero is a number.
Because it's neither positive or negative, right?
Because there's these categories of numbers, right? There's like integers, whole numbers,
yeah.
Real numbers.
I believe it is a real number.
Somebody text in, is zero a number?
Yeah, I think it's
the greatest debate in Vancouver sports radio history.
I believe the answer is yes.
I'm really pretty sure. That threw me for a loop there when somebody tried to pull that.
Oh,
zero's not a number?
Sorry. Oh, you're really pretty sure. Wow.
I am, yeah.
That's the zero
the
of
highest,
statements.
The highest level,
you know,
of confidence.
I'm going to say zero is a number, but that is not a statement.
All right, we will take a break there. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We will continue to look ahead, maybe play some player audio, but we will continue to preview game 5 between the Canucks and the Predators. By the way, Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com.
So I saw some really good Fleetwood Mac covers at Tootsie's.
Oh, really?
Last week,
nice.
In Nashville. Yeah, I was there with Harmon. And then the next day, Harmon was feeling a little under the weather, so he stuck back. And Gemma Karsten-Smith, our regular guest and good friend, was like, I've never been to Tootsie's and I really want to go. I was like, two straight nights. But of course,
I went, fine.
Twist my arm. So I end up meeting, as you'd expect, a bachelorette party there, right?
Of course.
And I'm sort of spending some time chatting with and mostly making fun of the group with, like, the person who's clearly, like, looking out for, like, the soberest
yes,
person,
yeah, yeah,
and, you
yeah.
know? And turns out their name was Harmon. Blew my mind.
That's very funny. Of course, I don't think you can go to Nashville without meeting a bachelorette party.
No.
The official home of the bachelorette party.
No chance. But B, how likely is it that you spend two consecutive nights drinking with a Harmon and they're different people?
At Tootsie's, with different people. That is very, very funny. By the way, we are here live from the Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. The inbox, I would say, is split relatively on the concept of whether zero is a number.
It is. Don't
this
worry about
one,
the
not only is zero a number, but it is a real number. That's from Fish Dancer, who says, in brackets, math guy. And if you can't trust a, in brackets, math guy on this, like, I mean, truly, truly, who can you trust? So I'm choosing to take that one to the bank. This text comes in. We're not going to spend the whole segment talking Elias Pettersson here, but just some text coming in. Okay, this one comes in. Not a hater. Love Petey. But is there a world where he just doesn't have the time and space in the playoffs to be as effective as he is in the regular season? He's got a smaller build, maybe the smallest on the team, doesn't have the strength to fend guys off, doesn't have the skating to create space for himself.
He's the smallest on the team.
I think this is who he is in a tight-checking series unless he works on his frame and skating in the offseason. And this is, and look, I understand that texture is trying to keep it much more tempered than, as you were saying, like,
you're right.
Oh, trade this
you're
guy
right.
or whatever.
I shouldn't be dismissive. I understand the point.
So I think it's, like, I think it's a totally – well, okay. I don't agree with the premise, but I don't have a problem with the texter bringing it up because I don't think – I think we're – this is like recency bias for what we've seen from Elias Pettersson in this series and leading into the playoffs, right? Because I don't think it is the case that he doesn't have the strength to fend guys off, right? We've seen him add the – reverse hit to his arsenal of weapons out there on the ice, right? We've seen him get a lot stronger since he came into the league. And again, he has his thing that sets him apart is the way he thinks the game. And I think he, when he's right mentally, when he's right physically, can absolutely use that to find space for himself in the playoffs and still be effective. Like, I don't think I am completely out on any idea that Elias Pettersson is not built for the playoffs or that his game doesn't translate for the playoffs. I think you can absolutely win playing like he does at his best. He's just got to be at his best. But I like, look, we're going to have potentially a lot of time this summer to kind of mull over what we saw from Pettersson in the playoffs. He still has a chance to completely change that conversation, to write a different story. But I want to get out ahead of it and say I do not buy whatsoever the idea that this is going to be like a long-term problem for the Canucks. He's incredibly talented. We have seen him so consistently have success in the NHL, and I think that's going to translate eventually to the playoffs as well.
Well, I know the bubble wasn't the playoffs, but it still was meaningful, tight-checking, physical hockey, and he was point per game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen him bring it in big games. We've seen it in him bring it in games that this team needed to win for XYZ reason. Legitimately, I think there's zero cause for concern. But I think we have to wait a little bit to see how this story is written, right? As you note, right, it doesn't take a lot to change the narrative around a player, especially at this time of year. You know, I noted I was surprised that the Garland line had been outscored, partly because Garland set up two crucial game winners in a series that the Canucks are up in 3-1, right? Bottom line changes it all.
Yep.
And I'd add, too, that, you know, once these hockey seasons end, we tend to find out a lot more about what a guy was dealing with, right? You get the, I call it the symphony, but, like, you get the sort of steady drip on garbage bag day of all the injuries that players have played through. They're often gruesome. Once we have all of that context, once we know how this ends, and once we know whether or not and what, or at least more of what, Pettersson was dealing with, I think we'll have a better appreciation or better ability to contextualize it. And I think what matters right now is what can this team get from Pettersson?
Yeah.
And can he make a difference if he's playing bottom 6 minutes the way that he has the last two games? He certainly needs to make more of one, although he did make a difference in moments and in a key moment in game four.
I will also just say, again, like, step back from the specifics of Elias Pettersson or this series or anything and just think about, like, recent NHL history, right? And how many times have we seen the narrative arc of, you know, really hyper-talented offensive player who doesn't immediately have incredible success in the playoffs, and all of a sudden there's this conversation, you know, like the Washington Capitals, like, should they trade Alex Ovechkin? Can you win with Alex Ovechkin making that much money on your salary cap? And as it turns out, yes, actually you can win a Stanley Cup with Alex Ovechkin, right? We brought up Jack Eichel. Oh, he's a team killer. His team's never going to win, right? Doesn't have that winning edge. Goes to Vegas and is one of their best players en route to the Stanley Cup. The Tampa Bay Lightning, Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, having that devastating playoff loss against Columbus, coming back, winning back-to-back Stanley Cups. That's not to say that it's fate, right? You still have to go out and do it. You have to put the work in. You have to learn from these lessons, as Taka would say, the learning lessons in the playoffs. But it's just to say, don't bail on a really, really talented player after four playoff games that haven't gone his way, right? There's a long time left for Elias Pettersson to change how we look at him in these playoffs and certainly how we look at him going forward. And I just think, like, worst case scenario here, this is going to be a valuable experience for him to draw on later on in his Canucks career. 650-650 is the Dubbar Lumber text message inbox. Keep getting your thoughts in. And, you know, I got to say one thing I'm really looking forward to as well tonight. And I think this could be – I don't want to get too much into the, you know, the intangible kind of airy-fairy sentimental stuff here on this show. But I think back to Game 1 and after Game 1, how much the players talked about what the crowd meant to them in that moment – I expect this to be an absolutely ridiculously loud building, Dresser.
Especially coming off of Sunday.
Oh, like, I mean, that was a moment, a capital M, all caps moment for a Canucks fan that got people jazzed, people so, so hyped. Now you get to come watch them have a chance to close out a series for the first time in forever. Like, the energy in this building is going to be off the charts, and I don't think the Canucks need that to win. But I think it's something they can draw on. I think it's something that can help them, especially early in this game.
Between the 12 seconds. Right. And then that moment in Game 4 on Sunday. Right. Even though the team was far away and fans were gathered, you know, individually watching the game or in bars or at the Hollywood Theater and just losing their minds at an improbable comeback, filling up their group chat first with recriminations about the team's brutal performance and then with absolute elation as the game twisted their way. You know, this is what it's about. Like, these are those moments that you sort of register to as, like, signposts on believing, you know, that, like, something special could be in the offing. And, you know, it's always interesting because there's a lot of times where you build up a game and it doesn't go your team's way because this is hockey.
Yeah, of course.
But the energy at the outset of the game tonight, I think the way that you're going to have almost like a delayed response from just how incredible Sunday was, I think that's going to be special. I think that's going to be special at Rogers Arena tonight.
Yeah, I think it has a chance. And it's a good point, right, that the Preds can always neutralize that to an extent. Although, in the crowds, very much, you know, to their credit, even when the Canucks were down in Game 1, they brought the energy, right?
Yep.
So it's going to take more than just one goal.
And Game 2.
Yeah, to neutralize
Honestly,
that.
Game 2, I thought the crowd was really strong all night long.
That's fair.
You know what, though? The Preds crowd was so bad in the third game.
That was weird.
It was. But they were so good in the fourth game.
Like, they really
were cheering the whole third period. And then devastation.
And then they got punched in the gut.
You should have heard the music that the musicians on the Titanic were playing. My God.
They really kept everyone's spirits up.
That sonata. Whew.
But your point about, hey, it's going to be loud at the beginning, and that's where you can capitalize on it. And, you know, it ties into what we were talking about earlier in the show, right? Like, come out and immediately establish your game, score early, score in the first 5 minutes, as this team has done so much.
On your first shot, baby.
Push that energy in the building.
If they go three in a row,
level.
If they go three in a row scoring on their first shot, that would be phenomenal.
That would be so fitting. That would be such a perfect way for this Canucks team to win a series.
We
figured out the key to hockey. Just score in your first shot.
Come on,
guys. It's not hard. Toronto, what are you doing? Just go out there and score.
Have you considered scoring on your first shot? Just an idea for you.
I just love how, you know, like, coaches from different sports will, like, pick the brain of successful coaches in sports, right? Like, whoever, right? You know, you go, an NBA coach goes and visits the NFL coach or whatever. I just love somebody in, like, the NFL talking to Rick Tocchet. He's like, you guys just score touchdowns on your first drive. It's like, oh, okay.
First play.
All right. Yeah. Just throw deep, man. Go score a touchdown. So, yeah, good point.
Why are you bothering to set it up?
650-650.
Oh, you know what? I meant to ask Rick Tocchet about it. Did you see the TNT broadcast yesterday?
No.
Because TNT, obviously, also now the NHL rights holder in the United States. And during the Lakers-Nuggets game, which I was home early enough to watch a great fourth quarter between the Lakers and the Nuggets and a great third period between the Stars and the Golden Knights, which I was very pleased about. And I'm watching the basketball game, and they do the read for the games tomorrow on TNT. And Charles Barkley, my boy Rick Tocchet, the Canucks, and my boy Rick Tocchet. And I was like, man, I bet Rick Tocchet has such a good Charles Barkley story.
What an absolute, like, that's amazing. That so is good. Such a good thing to have on your resume. Charles Barkley referred to me as my boy.
That's like you've made it territory.
That's amazing.
Yeah, very cool.
That is actually really, really cool.
I bet they had a sick time in Galveston.
I was just going to say, the dirty water in Galveston. No coming back from that.
I've been enjoying these.
Oh, that is absolutely a tough one. This text comes in. Which players on Nashville do you think Nashville fans are wishing would do more, like Canucks fans are, about Pettersson? Well, definitely Saros, I think, from what I've seen. And I'm not going to profess to be an expert necessarily on the fan.
O'Reilly.
Ire, but Saros. And then I think...
O'Reilly.
It's O'Reilly, but I think it's all, like, outside of Brock Besser and JT Miller... It feels like there's a lot of players that could play better in this series on both sides. You know what I mean? That could play a lot better. Like Ryan O'Reilly, I think, is fair. Forsberg's had that. He had that game-breaking moment. It goes in off his skates.
Yossi only has 2 points.
Yeah, Yossi. You know, the top line is out there having those defensive breakdowns, right? Like, as is the Carrier and Lausanne pairing late in games. So it's this weird thing where, yeah, you can look at the Nashville Predators and say that their process has been pretty good, that they've outplayed the Canucks for long stretches, but it's also not hard to find really key players on that team who you think could easily hit another gear and step up and play a lot better. Like, as you said, Roman Josi, Ryan O'Reilly, like top of the lineup guys where it's pretty easy to pick out parts of their game and say that needs to be a lot better. And I don't know how much of that are the fans are directing, you know, how much of that is internal. Like, is Andrew Brunette trying to find ways to get those guys going? But there's room for improvement. And now, I do think part of this is, and I know you've made this point on Twitter, these are two really good coaches, really well-coached teams, really well-prepared teams. So I do think, as much as we're focusing on where the Canucks could improve, and I'm sure Nashville is like, okay, our guys need to be better, our guys need to execute better, I think you have to caption all of that conversation on both sides with, like, both teams are doing a good job of frustrating top-of-the-lineup players in this series.
The moments where there's been real space and time have been few and far between. Mm-hmm. And Vancouver's top players have just made a meal of it. Whereas, like, Ryan O'Reilly missed, you know, twice on you know, pretty similar, like, wide open at the side of the net. And it's like he just happens to hit Ian Cole's face with a shot, whereas Besser was able to finish it. You know, what's the gap between O'Reilly and Besser in this series? I mean, it's basically that. But... you know, Besser's on his way to having an iconic playoff performance, and Ryan O'Reilly's one game away from elimination. It's not like we don't know that Ryan O'Reilly's a winner. You know?
Ryan McDonagh, right? Like, I know he's not the offensive guy, but, like, they have really successful individual players on this team.
They have winners who will be winners regardless of what happens over the balance of the series. But, yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, the Predators need to find moments for their skill to come through. And it's spaces at a premium. The Predators have, especially with Hughes's minutes limited in game two, found some space off the rush. Nyquist was able to finish wonderfully, right? They've had moments. They just haven't been able to, like, string it together, you know, with the exception of game two, and, like, make a difference where it counts. Certainly, too, they've had the... And this is sort of where it's so interesting, is, like, Vancouver's had, or Nashville's had, the edge in this series in a lot of respects, right? The Colton Sissons line, like, the Canucks still don't have an answer for that line. Mm-hmm. That line played a lot against the Garland-Lindholm line, and I thought the Lindholm line struggled mightily until they finally ended the game. It's like Vancouver's kind of got two things going for them, in my view, or three. Well, sorry, I'm going to go four. Their special teams have been better.
Can we get five?
No. Their special teams have been better, but especially I think their penalty kill has kind of taken over this series.
Yeah.
File that on things I didn't have on my bingo card coming into this series. The Miller-Besser duo has obviously really found something. They've been sort of the one duo that's been able to regularly manufacture time and space. You know, either team. In this series, you've had Garland passing from down low. That's been, even though that line, in my view, has not been close to the level that it has been for much of the season as a trio in terms of their ability to drive play. And granted, I'm grading on a curve because my expectations are so high for the Joshua Garland duo after what we saw all year. Even though that's been true, Garland's found a way to win two games with like down low passing. And I think that matters, man. Like, even with the season that he had, even as the narrative around him has flipped in this city, on the eve of the playoffs, you could understand various talent evaluators around the league, maybe even some internal evaluators wondering, like, how does he hold up in a tough physical playoff series? Well, guess what? He's made huge plays from hard areas of the ice to win games in the playoffs. So I actually think that matters.
It's honestly another thing you would put in the category almost of like the game-breaking weapons that the Canucks 100%. Have, right? Where you just need just to be a moment with him down there on the goal line with the puck, and you have Joshua and Lindholm, and like that could be it. Right. Yep. And it's you wouldn't have put him in that game breaking category, and it's still just very like it's a sliver, it's really that one thing, but it counts alongside, you know,
absolutely.
JT Miller's ability to do it, Quinn Hughes' ability to do it.
It's helped the Canucks survive despite the fact that, you know, two of their most reliable game breakers, Quinn Hughes and Pettersson, both have, you know, for different reasons, not quite been at their usual consistent elite level. In certain games over the course of the series, or in Pettersson's case, throughout this series. And then finally, the last one is Vancouver's goaltending has been better. So it's like Vancouver's got these huge edges where it matters in terms of finish, in terms of goal prevention, mm-hmm. right? And in terms of really frustrating the Nashville power play where, you know, certainly in game two, for example, right? The Predators' power play had a chance to blow, or sorry, game one. The Predators' power play had multiple chances yep. to blow that game open, and Vancouver's PK really bounced back, really prevented that from occurring. So those edges have mattered. That those edges have counted, and yet when you look at sort of the matchup battle up and down the lineup, it's been mostly in Nashville's favor, with one crucial exception, which is that to this point, Nashville hasn't scored a goal. 5-on-5 with the Miller line on the ice. And that's been big here, too. So, you know, can Vancouver maintain the edges that matter, right? Or at some point does, like, the critical mass of control that the Predators have tended to have over the course of the series, even though a lot of that data is sort of, like, soured by just how much Vancouver pressed down two in the third
yes.
period of game
yeah.
two. Nashville's led for most of the series. They've controlled most of the series at 5-on-5. Most of the 5-on-5 matchups look like they're going Nashville's way. At some point, does that critical mass catch up? Like, does the dam break effectively? Mm-hmm. Or can the Canucks sort of hold off fate for one more night and earn what would be a pretty historic victory in this building?
Well, or also, can the Canucks turn the tide
right.
on that 5-on-5 battle?
And they definitely can.
Yeah, it's not impossible. It's just will they do it?
They can, but here's my question for you is like how much of Vancouver's, you know, spiking 5-on-5 quality, right? Because it improved massively over the course of the season. How much of it is dependent on Quinn Hughes to create that environment?
I think it's a very fair question.
And are we at a level based on his deployment, you know, based on what his deployment hints at, where we can expect that, right? So because that was my take after game two. I was like, people are talking about this series as if it's like Vancouver's going to put Nashville under siege and can Nashville shot block their way out of it. And then game three and four completely flipped. You know, as I was saying, I didn't think that the extent to which Vancouver had controlled mm-hmm. the series was necessarily sustainable or a reflection of their true talent. I don't feel like the shoe should necessarily be placed on the other foot because I'm not sure whether or not to expect the usual Quinn Hughes is one of the best drivers in the NHL stuff. You know, I know that he can still make special plays. We saw it in a crucial moment in game four. I know he still, you know, could make the difference tonight, but shift after shift, can he warp the shape of the game to his will, bend the game to his will? That I'm just not sure about yet. And I probably won't be until I see it again.
Well, we've talked all year about how Quinn Hughes is the engine at 5-on-5 for this team, right? And I think we're getting a really direct lesson in just how true that is in this series.
Yes.
I picked the Canucks in five, and part of that was, like, I expected Quinn Hughes to be out there for 28 minutes a night dominating and doing Quinn Hughes stuff, right? And obviously that hasn't come to fruition. I still have a chance to get my pick right against all odds.
Minus 125. Well, no,
amazing.
But it's a good illustration because you have Canucks in five.
Yeah.
Which is minus 125 as it's currently priced. I have Canucks in seven, which is currently 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I feel like the Nashville is right there and this is going to be a tight series take is like more accurate than the mm-hmm. Canucks are going to blow them out of the water take.
Now, to be fair, I did think it would be.
So you might be right, but like, you're going to be lucky.
Right on a technicality.
No, not a technicality.
No, it's true. It
truly right.
We'll see. Well, we'll see, depending on the results tonight.
True. Hey, good result, bad process,
but,
bud.
Hey, love it. What do you think going to law school and then ending up in this job is? Good result. Terrible, terrible process. That's how I live my life, buddy. But, you know, a big part of it, like my confidence in the Canucks was Quinn Hughes, right? And it's just such a drop-off. It's almost impossible to overstate what a drop-off it is from Quinn Hughes, and especially like if they had been able to ramp up his minutes without damaging his efficiency too much, and what that version of Quinn Hughes would be like versus what he was like for, you know, 40 minutes and really like more like 50, 55 minutes. I know he played a lot in the third period, but he didn't really turn on the magic until late in that one. And so I think that's what this series, I don't want to say it's going to hinge on it, because as we've seen, they can get wins without that. But boy, it would go a long way to wrapping things up tonight if he's able to find that level. And I do think, you know, if we talk about the mentality and the psychological aspect of this game, for the Canucks players that are dealing with some bumps and bruises, it's such a carrot to think, like, okay, dig deep, push through for this one game because the rewards are massive, right? And so can Quinn Hughes find that level for this one to kind of leave no doubt in this series, right? He's such a key player for them, and, man, I think that would go a long, long way to winning this game, obviously, to giving the team a lot of confidence going in to round two. Can't wait for this one tonight.
Let's go.
Going to be special. Going to be really, really exciting. Crowd's going to be into it. Canucks have a chance to win a playoff series on home ice for the first time since 2011. Keep it right here. Puck drop is at 7. More game day coverage coming up here on Sportsnet 650.